Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. In the tour, Lyle Lovett and Lisa Loeb, in conversation and song, two iconic songwriters share the stage, trade songs, and swap stories. Lisa Loeb is a Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter, touring musician, SiriusXM radio host, actor, entrepreneur, and philanthropist who started her career with the platinum-selling hit song Stay, I Missed You from the 1994 film Reality Bites.
You say I only hear what I want to. You say so all the time, so and I thought what I felt was simple, and I thought that I don't belong, and now that I am leaving, now I know that I did something wrong, cause I missed you.
The Dallas, Texas native's 15th album, A Simple Trick to Happiness, was released in February 2020. Lisa is also well known to families with kids for her five children's albums and two illustrated children's books with music. The tour, Lyle Lovett and Lisa Loeb in Conversation and Song, will land at Universal Preservation Hall in Saratoga Springs, New York on Thursday, May 2nd, the Mehewi in Great Barrington, Massachusetts on Friday, May 10th, and UPAC in Kingston, New York on Saturday, May 11th. Lisa Loeb joins us now. Hello, welcome back to the Roundtable.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I say welcome back. I spoke with you in 2011. Not that I expect you to remember that, because it was a long time ago, and you've talked to a lot of people since then. But, you know, how you been?
I've been good. Lots has happened since 2011. And yet, here we are today. Still good. Still everything is going well. How about you?
I've been good, you know, up and down, lots of things, like you said. I want to start with, when I told my husband I was interviewing you today, I then could not help but sing all of Stay to because I kept knowing every word. I was like, well, I know the next part, I'm going to keep going. And he said, are you going to tell Lisa Loeb that you know all the words? And I said, no, Lisa Loeb is used to people, especially around my age, knowing all the words to Stay. Do people come up and sing it at you?
People do sing it at me. It's funny. People sing it at me. They ask me to sing it with them. They, you know, we've seen professional people like in Hot Tub Time Machine 2 completely change the words. Mm-hmm. I was just thinking about that the other day, that I love the fact that the song Stay has, like for me, it has so many memories. Whenever I sing it live, which is every concert, and often with those cameo messages, and I have lots of opportunities to sing it. And I have my own memories from recording it, from writing it, but also, you know, because it's such a nostalgic song for some people because they first heard it back in the 90s, but there's also this current connection with it. And because it is so serious, not only do I get the benefit of having people have a serious connection with it and a nostalgic connection and an emotional connection, but it's also one of those songs that you get to like change the words and have fun with it and get to be a little tongue-in-cheek with it. So I like getting to do all of those things with that song.
Reality Bites came out in 1994. So the song came out in 1994, which is 30 years ago this year. Is it safe to say that your life changed that year? That things became very different that year for you?
You know, it really did. And it's funny because I had started writing songs when I was a little kid, like when I took piano lessons, we were encouraged to write songs. So I was writing songs when I was a teenager. I was writing songs with lyrics. I kind of switched over to guitar. I was writing original music back then. All through college, I had a group with my friend Elizabeth Mitchell. We had a group called Liz and Lisa, and we experienced a lot of success. It was cool. We would get like fan letters at our PO box, you know, from other students, and we always had a packed crowd. But after I moved to New York City, I wrote that song in the early 90s, and the soundtrack came out in 94. Things were moving forward. You know, I was playing at clubs that were hard to get into, like CBGB's and the Lone Star Roadhouse. I was touring. I had a band. Things were going well. There were record companies that were interested. I was going to all the different music festivals, like South by Southwest and the New Music Seminar, all these things that felt like things were moving forward. But And, you know, I was on some compilations and played on some college radio, but that was the first really huge thing. I remember finding out that the song Stay was going to be on the Reality Bites soundtrack. I remember telling the people I was temping for, I was doing temp work, which is the perfect job for a musician in the 90s because you could use their Xerox machine. It made you wake up early in the morning. You could make flyers. They paid you well. But it was a big deal to get a song on the Reality Bites soundtrack. My friend Ethan Hawke, who was in the movie, he was a friend of mine I had met through other actors and friends from college. I had made music for his theater company. I had, and, but he asked me for the song "Stay" and a couple of other songs. We gave him a cassette tape, and that was a huge leap from having a pretty popular band in New York City to being on a really national platform, you know, having a song on the radio, on not just college radio, but on commercial radio. It was a big step that I'd spent many, many years heading towards that step on that map.
Speaking of platforms and radio, you, it seems, have a, well, you host a show on Sirius XM, and now you have a podcast on the Sirius XM app called Where They Are Now. And it is a offshoot, a spin-off of your daily 90s on 9 show Stay with Lisa Loeb. So, and you've hosted a radio show when you were much younger too. What do you like about being in the host chair on the radio? What does this give to you?
Well, it's weird because when I was a kid in high school, I went to an all-girls school in Texas, and the boys' school had a radio station, 88.5 KRSM, and I loved music. I collected records. I was obsessed with classic rock and new wave and local bands and discovering things. And so I jumped at the chance to have a radio show. So I ended up with a radio show for 3 years on that indie station. By senior year, I was, I think, the program director. They couldn't make me station manager because I was from the girls' school. But I loved music. I DJ'd parties. I got to play music. I'd play like deep tracks off of albums that were popular albums, but maybe, you know, I loved back in those days. I did not stick to a playlist. I played what I wanted. I got to share music with people that I was really excited about. I always loved random. It's sort of like perfect for social media now. I liked random stuff and funny stuff and quirky things and just talking about random, very mundane things and huge things going on in the world. And I loved sharing music back when I was a kid. It was really important to me to make sure people knew about this one song on this one David Bowie record or this new local band. On my show on Sirius XM 90s on 9, I don't pick the songs. They are all songs that were popular in the 90s. And I'm still learning a lot about music from the 90s because although I had popular songs in the 90s, I was still a classic rock person and an alternative rock person. And so I'm still learning about some of the musicians from the 90s. But they still expect me to talk about random, weird stuff. You know, like some
Good.
stuff about the 90s, some stuff about myself. Every once in a while, I see on social media a troll saying, "Why are you talking about all this weird stuff?" And I'm like, "That's what they hired me to do. That's what they want me to do. That's what I do when I play live shows. That's really how I find myself connecting to people. It makes it fun for me. And from what I hear from people who come see my concerts or listen to my show who do enjoy it, that's what they enjoy about it. So that's what I'm doing on the radio. And I created the podcast. I was interviewed for an Oprah Winfrey Channel show years ago when I had a new record out, and I was really excited about the record. I found out there were other really cool people who were being interviewed, like Isaac Mizrahi, and they came to your house and they light it really well and it's beautiful.
Sure.
And I didn't actually talk to Oprah, but she did the wraparound. And then I found out that the show was called, after I had committed to it, I found out the show was called Where Are They Now? I was like, well, that sounds like a Spinal Tap moment. You know, it's like when Spinal Tap's sitting around the radio listening to themselves, impressed that they're hearing one of their old songs from the 60s. And then the DJ comes on and says, they're in the Where They Are Now files. You know, and I was like, Where Are They Now files? Sorry, I'm mixing it up. And I suggested to the Oprah folks, I was like, you know, why don't you call it Where They Are Now? Because it's a nod to the fact that you might know certain people from certain songs or certain time periods of your life. But the reason they're on the show now is because they've got other really current cool stuff going on. So I finally got my dream come true, and I get to interview people that you know from another era, like Weird Al I knew from the 80s, or LeAnn Rimes became really popular a certain era, or Kim Fields, the actor who was from The Facts of Life, but she's doing huge TV stuff and she's a writer and a director now. So I get to interview people, and then we play parts of those segments of the interviews on the radio show as well.
Are you the same on mic in an interview as you are when you're the host, as you are when you're the guest? You're my guest now. Is it, are you a little bit different? Have you found who Lisa Loeb is on mic, or are you just yourself on mic? Which,
you know,
I don't know if anybody totally is.
I don't know if anybody is totally. I'm pretty close, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not yelling at anyone to like move their shoes into the other room or like, what is this? You know, like, did you do your homework? It depends on who I'm speaking to. Like if I'm friendly already with somebody, it just depends. I think when I'm on the question end of the questions, I don't talk as much. I can't stop talking. I know I learned in Japan years ago, especially when people were translating what I was saying, I needed to slow down and say less, but I'm not good at the main idea. But I do try when I'm interviewing people, part of my job again, the folks from SiriusXM, they do prefer me to include my own experiences and go ahead and connect with people I'm speaking to, you know, about things where we might have met or what we have in common, or it's okay to go off on a tangent that if I were just interviewing somebody there who is promoting their record, I would not necessarily go into all of those things about me, but that's what they want. And I do think that probably makes it unique because there's a lot of interviews out there. So,
yeah, the reason I get to speak with you today is because you and Lyle Lovett are playing In Conversation and song shows in our region. How did this tour come about? How did you all work this up?
I am so excited for this Lyle Lovett tour. I call it the Lyle Lovett tour, even though my name's up there on the poster too. I opened for him when he put out the record Road to Ensenada back in the 90s. And it was a huge opportunity for me. My folks were big fans of his. I was a big fan of his from, you know, his sort of alternative country songwriting from when I was in college. And he also had a career that I admired so much. You know, here was a person who wasn't necessarily like a big pop star, but he was playing these amazing theaters to these dedicated audiences. So I got to open for him in the 90s, and I learned so much from watching him play every night. And we remained friends. So he asked me if I would do this. He does a lot of touring, some with his big band, some with his acoustic band, and some in this particular setup, which is two songwriters on stage together, sometimes performing, singing together, sometimes talking to each other and playing songs and trading songs. And I'm really excited to be a part of it.
It seems like it's going to be just a lovely evening with two great conversationalists and songwriters. How much do you... or will you plan the evening, or will you two just kind of read the vibe?
Well, it's funny that you ask that, because I did ask him. I said, hey, what are you wearing? Because I'm from Dallas and you want to look like you're showing up to the same event.
Sure.
So that was one question. And then musically, I was like, are there any songs that, you know, that I'm going to sing with you or you're going to sing with me? And he said, you know, we really just figure it out on stage. We'll figure it out on stage. So that works with me really well. I usually make a set list for myself before I play because I want to make sure I include certain songs, and there's certain songs I enjoy playing. I often veer off of my own set list, and I always have a large chunk of my songs be requests from the audience, because as a music fan myself, there's certain songs like that Bowie song I was talking about on the second side of that one album I really want to hear. So I think it'll be, you know, whatever happens, happens. But I know for myself, I usually like playing a couple of songs people expect, songs they might know from the radio, because I hate to go so far and, you know, you don't get to hear Daryl Hall and John Oates sing Sarah Smile or something. You know, there's certain songs you gotta hear if you go to the thing. So,
yeah. What are some of your other favorites of your songs that you like to bring out and perform on? I mean, you have, you know, decades of songs
by
now.
Well, I was thinking specifically for this. I mean, I have a newer record called A Simple Trick to Happiness.
Yes.
And I feel really, really connected to those songs. And I've played them live quite a bit. And I, again, like, not that it's all about the audience clapping for me, but they do really connect with those songs and the meanings of the songs, and they mean a lot to me. So I'll probably play a good number of those. Then I woke up, didn't know if I had fallen back to sleep. Was I dreaming? Am I dreaming? Is this happening to me? Yeah, I woke up and I noticed all these little things. Someone pinched me. Hey, this is all right. This is my life. I'm coming up on the 30th anniversary of my album Tales, and I still I feel so connected to a lot of my old songs. I saw you as you walked. lot of kids' songs, which are more like folk songs. They're family-friendly songs.
Put a little salt in the pot and shake it. Gather all the stars and the moon and bake it. You can, you can, you can make anything you dream. Grab a little piece of the sun from your pocket. Reach up to the arms of the clock and stop it. You got, you got all the time you need.
I have a brand new song coming out that I really want to try to play live. I haven't played it live a lot, called Take It While the Taking's Good. And coincidentally, I think it really does fit in with the style of Lyle's music. It's just a really, I really like the story of it. I just think it would be a good match. And I also feel like since, you know, even at my own shows, I always feel like there's the person who really wanted to go there and the person they dragged to the show. You know, sometimes it's like two people who really listen together or a group of people who listen to me. But I do normally sign albums and stuff after my shows, and I hear people's stories, and I do notice there's usually the person who really wanted to be there and the person who brought them or the person they brought with them. And I just feel like when I saw Lyle Lovett play for the first time and then many, many times after that, he really is such a great storyteller that even if you don't know his music, you really get drawn in. And I try to do that also. So I feel like I try to choose songs that I think people are going to connect with, that I connect with. So it'll be a real variety, I think, between both of us, you know, from each other as well as within each of our songs we decide to play.
It is just a beautiful idea for a tour. I think people are going to be very lucky to be able to attend, and I feel extremely fortunate to have gotten to speak with you about it. Thank you so much, Lisa.
You too. Thank you so much. And sorry you got to me right after my first coffee. I've got a lot to say.
No, I love it. You're great. Lyle Lovett and Lisa Loeb in Conversation and Song will be at Universal Preservation Hall in Saratoga Springs, New York on May 2nd, the Mehewi in Great Barrington, Massachusetts on May 10th, and UPAC in Kingston, New York on May 11th. Links to more information will be posted along with this interview at WAMC.org. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable.
Why are there so many songs about rainbows, and what's on the other side? Rainbows are visions, but only illusions, and rainbows have nothing to hide. So we've been told, and some choose to be.